Today, the Matt Walsh Show, pro-Palestine demonstrators descended on the Met Gala yesterday. First, they targeted universities and now Hollywood celebrities. The left's own Frankenstein monster has officially turned against them. And demonstrators also defaced a World War I memorial. Police allowed that to happen because they were too busy protecting the rich celebrities. What does that tell you? Plus, Kristi Noem's disastrous book tour continues. But why? And I don't often make TV show recommendations on this show, but a new reality show out of Australia is unintentionally the funniest thing on TV right now. I have to tell you about it. Finally, Star Wars has introduced another non-binary character. That brings up an important question, which is, why is anyone still watching anything related to Star Wars? All of that and more today on The Matt Walsh Show. Well, who doesn't love a good comeback story, especially when it's my favorite meat company bringing back their price lock guarantee? Yes, it's true. Good Ranchers price lock guarantee is back, offering an exclusive price lock on 100% American meat. This is your last chance to subscribe and have Good Ranchers secure your price, shielding you from inflation until 2026. Subscribe to any of their meat boxes to secure your price against inflation for the next 18 months. GoodRanchers.com is where I get the most tender, flavorful meat with options like beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. They have something for even the pickiest of eaters. What I really love about Good Ranchers is their commitment to transparency. They believe that you have the right to know exactly what's in your food. They're amazing supporters of this show, so go support them and take the mystery out of all the meat you buy. Right now, when you go to GoodRanchers.com, use promo code Walsh, you'll get their exclusive price shield and additional 10% off your order. This is the last week to secure the best price on meat until 2026. So go to GoodRanchers.com, use my code Walsh. That's GoodRanchers.com, promo code Walsh today. Every year, I'm confronted with the decision of whether to talk about the Met Gala. And it can be a tough decision, if I'm being totally honest. On one hand, it's always easy to point and laugh at rich leftists wearing weird costumes and making fools out of themselves. On the other hand, it's gotten way too easy to do that. And as far as celebrity freak shows go, the Met Gala, you know, it's sort of like the Oscars at this point. Its supposed unpredictability is now cliche. Its zaniness is now boring. Unless mayhem breaks out, say like an actor slaps the presenter live on stage or something like that, the truth is that no one really cares about any of these events anymore. In fact, I'm still not even sure what the Met Gala is. All I know is that the celebrities dress strangely and then go into, I guess, a big museum. What do they do inside the museum? Is there some kind of award ceremony? Is it a dance? Is it like celebrity prom or something? Do they sacrifice a live goat and drink its blood while chanting satanic curses? Is it some combination of these things? Nobody knows for sure. And most of all, nobody cares. But fortunately, something interesting did happen at the Met Gala last night, or at least outside of it. Mobs of pro-Palestine demonstrators, apparently bored of their tent cities on college campuses, slowly marched through Manhattan towards the Met. And when they arrived, they tore down the police barricades and flooded the street. Watch. So I threw in that last clip just for fun. That was Lizzo dressed like something that you might find inside an unflushed toilet at Panda Express. And that's what she wore to the Met Gala while riots raged outside in a clash of poor commies versus rich commies, as Peachy Keenan put it. These riots should also bring to mind, I think, some immediate logistical considerations that the Democratic Party now has to think about. For one thing, it's safe to say that planning for the Democratic National Convention is going through some last-minute revisions right about now. Just imagine being in charge of security for the DNC. You're going to need bigger barricades than they had at the Met, and probably a lot more cops. But More barricades and cops aren't going to fix the underlying problem the Democratic Party has created here. There's now a full-on uprising on the left against the elitism that Democrats have long embraced. And the media is getting involved too. Yahoo, for example, has already turned on the Met Gala. They published a piece declaring, "The Met Gala's opulence is always gross. This year, it's obscene." Now, the whole article is a rant that hits a crescendo with this paragraph, which is probably the single longest run-on sentence I've ever seen in my entire life. Okay, here it is. This whole thing's one sentence, just so you know. "Even in an era filled with the horrors of late-stage capitalism run amok, bipartisan support for genocide, rolling back of reproductive, civil, and voting rights, a threadbare social safety net, decades of wage stagnation, tax cuts for the rich, the crushing of unions and labor rights, expansion of the militarized police surveillance state, creeping techno-authoritarianism, untested, unregulated, and unchecked AI, entrenched racial inequality and injustice, right-wing and white supremacist extremist violence, and Boeing jet parts falling from the sky like so many dead whistleblowers. That kind of frivolous urgency promises that this year's event nonetheless will stand out as a vainglorious display of self-congratulatory decadence and tone-deaf extravagance." Now, first of all, just as a stylistic matter, if you're going to make a sentence that long, it needs to be coherent. And Boeing jet parts are falling from the sky like so many dead whistleblowers? It doesn't even make sense. The dead whistleblowers didn't fall from the sky. I mean, they're not being pushed out of planes. One of them shot himself, allegedly, and the other died of an illness. Now, even if you subscribe to the theory that Boeing's hitmen have killed these whistleblowers, which who knows, maybe they did, the fact remains they didn't fall from the sky. Okay, they died on the ground. So the metaphor just doesn't work. And this is the problem you get into with 100-word sentences. Eventually, you just lose track of what you're saying. In any event, that whole massive paragraph could be summed up as saying, we're living through late-stage capitalism right now. That's what the left-wing media is saying. That's the way that they are framing this. And of course, late-stage capitalism is one of their favorite phrases to use these days. And they used to celebrate the Met Gala, but not anymore. Now they're saying the same thing the demonstrators are, which is that the frivolous elite are partying while Rome burns, and which they are, of course. And they're furious about it, or pretending to be. Now, what the media and these demonstrators don't want to admit is that the elitists at this gala, all of the celebrities who are dressed like slutty Star Wars villains and so on, are on their team. You know, the celebrities are part of the ruling class. The protesters and media critics are its products, and in some cases, quite literally, its offspring. Now, to be sure, the celebrities and college administrators and politicians are reluctant to acknowledge that their own Frankenstein monster is turning against them, but that's exactly what's happening. Remember that it was 2 years ago that AOC showed up to the Met Gala with a tax the rich gown. There were a bunch of sympathetic news stories highlighting her bravery at the time. And here's how AOC justified showing up to an event that cost $300,000 per table while equipped with a custom dress, handbag, shoes, and jewelry costing more than $2,000. Watch.
"You know that this dress has a message for this Met Gala. Tell me about what that is."
"The message, tax the rich right there. But it's really about having a real conversation about fairness and equity in our system. And I think that this conversation is particularly relevant as we debate both a budget and budget and reconciliation bill. But we're talking about providing working families with childcare, healthcare, meeting the climate crisis at the scale that it deserves. I think that ultimately, you know, we're at a very critical point. I think there are some folks who are starting to really understand that this is a very critical conversation for us to be having right now. Other folks have a vested interest in not having that conversation. But our point is to keep organizing and to keep it going."
"It's a really important conversation," AOC says. "Some people just aren't ready to hear it, but we need to punish rich people. We need to make them as uncomfortable as possible. We need to, take their money." And that was the message from AOC, who not incidentally grew up in a very well-off suburb. Her whole shtick was always hypocritical and disingenuous, of course. But it turns out that leftist activists were listening to this rhetoric, I guess. They were taking it seriously. We've seen this a lot lately. When Chuck Schumer threatened Supreme Court justices, leftists showed up at the justices' homes. When the White House claimed that trans kids were being abused, a leftist shot and killed Christians. When Democrats accused Israel of genocide, college students occupied university buildings. Now, 2 years after AOC attacked the Met, leftists are gathering outside of the building. This is the escalation that Democrats have primed the country for. It's now in progress, whether Democrats intended it to happen to them or not, which, of course, they didn't. That's not to say that ruling elites are going to roll over and let this happen. I mean, as you saw in the footage, the cops started making arrests. First of all, showed up in force and were making arrests the very second the protesters trespassed through the barricades in front of the Met. Like, they were on the scene immediately. Now, that's kind of a noticeable contrast when you compare it to other things. Like, when these people set up encampments on college campuses, they were given, in most cases, a few days, maybe a week before the cops moved in. When they looted and burned poor neighborhoods in 2020, they were given about 3 months to inflict carnage before anyone did anything about it. But when they showed up at the Met Gala, they were given 3 seconds before the arrest started. So it really shows you kind of how the hierarchy works. The Democrats can't protect the rest of the country from these mobs, nor do they intend to. So last night, in addition to creating a scene at the Met Gala, leftists also vandalized a World War I memorial in New York and torched an American flag in front of it. Watch. So please note again the contrast, the hierarchy, and the fact that this was happening at the exact same time as the Met Gala thing really shows you where the priorities are when you notice what kinds of illegal demonstrations the police will stop and which demonstrations they'll allow to continue. The mob can deface World War I memorials all they want, because in doing so, they're communicating their hatred for this country and everything it stands for. So Democrats who run New York aren't going to stop them. But the mob isn't allowed to inconvenience celebrities at the Met under any circumstances. Now, we'll talk more about the vandalism of the memorial in a bit. The point is that this is the hierarchy that Democrats clearly want to enforce. The trouble is getting the mob to respect the hierarchy. And the Democrats are kind of having trouble with that at the moment. Yet they still seem oblivious, the Democrats are, or are acting oblivious, at least, to the fact that they created this monster themselves. And that's why inside the Met, as chaos unfolded outside, the party continued uninterrupted. And so did all of this associated weirdness, which was as off-putting as it's ever been. Take, for example, this decoy costume worn by someone using the name Carol G. And apparently she wanted to keep her real costume a secret, so earlier in the evening she sported this beige umbrella-looking lampshade thing instead. Watch. So there you go, like a big lampshade, maybe a jellyfish, sort of a deep sea creature vibe to that as well. Now imagine being a hardcore AOC-loving leftist who sees this. Democrats have spent the last several years telling you to despise rich people and commit crimes in the name of political activism. And then down the street from your hippie commune at the local university, some celebrity is walking around in a lampshade costume, which probably cost, you know, $50,000 or something. And the entire Democratic Party establishment is pretending that it's all normal. What do you do? How would you view the Democratic Party establishment after seeing that? Now, as for the costume itself, of course, it's clearly a bid for attention, and I guess it worked. I'm talking about it, but it's not even an original idea. As a lot of people have pointed out, the outfit bears a striking resemblance to a certain shower curtain costume from the film Karate Kid, only with different colors. So there's really no redeeming qualities whatsoever here. It's a total debacle all around. But to be fair, there was at least some originality on display last night. For example, this celebrity apparently walked through a wind tunnel full of roses somewhere before arriving at the Met. And for her trouble, Vogue named her as one of the best dressed women of the evening. Watch.
Did me a really like wonderful favor by making this gorgeous piece.
It is
the imagination and the detail that have gone into it are beyond, and the sort of interpretation of what it is to move through the Garden of Time and the way everything sort of like degrades as time goes on, and what comes from these gardens. We have the critters and bugs.
It is so good. This is another look that I'm like should be hung up in the
it's
museum.
Really
like,
You know, we can assume again that this woman paid many thousands of dollars for that outfit, which is just a trench coat with flower petals and glitter glued onto it. It looks like something, I mean, it really looks like something my four-year-old daughter might make. As everybody knows, in the mind of a four-year-old girl, anything and everything can be made prettier with copious amounts of glitter and flowers, which is a fine mentality for a small child, doesn't translate very well in this case. And as self-congratulatory as it is, again, there's no self-awareness whatsoever. It's almost as if the entire purpose of the event is to celebrate the elite's total inability to detect how preposterous, self-absorbed, and laughable they are. This is nothing new. It's been the case since the Met Gala was established. It's always been a mini theater of the absurd. What's changed is that the voting base of the Democratic Party isn't laughing along with these clowns as much anymore. They turned against the universities. Now they've turned against Hollywood. What the protesters, of course, don't understand is that they have inherited their own worldview and everything they believe from these very institutions and these very people. Hollywood and academia don't realize that they're being attacked by their own Frankenstein. But the Frankenstein monster also doesn't realize that it is the Frankenstein monster. And if Frankenstein ever wakes up to that fact, well, then the ruling class will really be in trouble. Now let's get to our five headlines. Amid the chaos of my daily life, I find solace in my Helix mattress. It's not just a mattress, it's a sanctuary that prepares me for the challenges of the next day. Helix harnesses years of mattress expertise to offer a truly elevated sleep experience. The Helix Elite Collection includes six different mattress models, each tailored for specific sleep positions and firmness preferences. If you're nervous about buying a mattress online, you don't have to be. Helix has you covered. Their unique sleep quiz customizes your mattress based on your body type and also your sleep preferences. No more generic mattresses made for somebody else. I took the Helix quiz and I was matched with a firm but breathable mattress. I love the mattress. I'm confident you'll love yours too. Plus, Helix has a 10-year warranty. And you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. Helix's financing options and flexible payment plans ensure a great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for my listeners. Just go to helixsleep.com/Walsh. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. helixsleep.com/Walsh. With Helix, better sleep starts now. As mentioned briefly in the opening, New York Post reports, anti-Israel protesters vandalized a World War I memorial in Central Park on Monday and burned an American flag after a mob of more than 1,000 marchers was blocked by cops from reaching the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where the star-studded Met Gala was in full swing. At least one America-hating vandal torched Old Glory at the site of the 107th Infantry Memorial, the base which was defaced with graffiti reading Gaza in large black letters. Others plastered the statue's bronze soldiers with stickers of the Palestinian flag that reads, "Stop the genocide, end the apartheid, free Palestine." Some of the protesters climbed atop the infantrymen and waved Palestinian flags or draped them over the figures. It should, of course, fill you with disgust and rage to see any of our memorials defaced, especially a veterans memorial. And then especially, and then on top of it, you're burning an American flag. And on top of that, you are defacing our memorials with your foreign flag. And all of this, again, is allowed to happen while down the street, you know, the cops are out in full force making sure that these people don't get anywhere near the celebrities in their umbrella costumes and all of that. Now, as to burning the flag, you know, the Supreme Court ruled that has ruled that burning the flag is protected speech. You know, I think there's an argument to be made otherwise, but that's all academic at this point. What I do know, though, is that open burning laws are certainly valid, and they are in place everywhere in the country, and they do not violate free speech. They're especially in place in cities. Okay, like you can't set a fire almost anywhere in a city. I mean, only in the strictest of circumstances can you do that. So if we had leaders who took the law seriously and took the flag seriously, okay, they would allow you to burn the flag on your own property. If it is your own property, it's your flag that you bought and you're on your own property and you're in a place where you're allowed to burn and all of that, and you're doing it according to those regulations, then nobody can stop you. I mean, you're a scumbag. You're a piece of absolute filth for doing that in this country. You don't belong here in this country if you burn the flag. But, you know, according to the Supreme Court, you have the right to do that. But if you're not on your property and you're not where public burning is allowed, then there's no reason to allow this. The cops should show up, put out the fire, and charge you with every crime they legally can. I wouldn't be able to show up to that memorial and light a little campfire. I wouldn't be able to do that. I wouldn't be able to start a fire in a trash can to warm my hands or something. The Supreme Court decision, again, only protects your right to burn the flag on your property. But burning things on someone else's property or on public property where burning is not allowed and without a permit is arson, and it should be treated as such, especially where the flag is involved. And what is more, we all know that if I showed up to that memorial or anywhere else and I burned a pride flag, we all know damn well that the fire would be put out and I would be arrested for open burning without a permit and with whatever other crime they could find to charge me with. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if I was charged with a hate crime. I would probably be charged with a hate crime. But that's because our leaders value the pride flag more than they value our national flag. Indeed, they considered the pride flag to be our national flag. And another point on the defacing the memorial. Now, when I first saw this, and of course, this is far from the first time we've seen a memorial, a statue, a monument being defaced. But my first thought when I saw this was that it's just shameful that there is really no current elected Republican, or there are very few, who have called for a law prescribing, let's say, a decade in prison for anyone who defaces, vandalizes, destroys, or tears down one of our monuments. That there should be, everybody should be calling for that. Every Republican elected official should be calling for that. There would be wide public support for something like that. But then I discovered that it's actually worse than that, because there already is such a law on the books. Now, you'd be excused for not knowing that this law exists, just like I didn't know that it exists, because it's not being enforced. Like, it might as well not exist because it's not being used. But the Veterans Memorial Preservation and Recognition Act of 2003 actually does call for 10 years in prison for people who deface veterans' memorials. And that's what these Free Palestine demonstrators did. The law's already in place. And so how many Republicans have specifically called for that law to be actually enforced? Like, the law is there. Why are we not arresting these people and giving them 10 years in prison? The law, we can. They're defacing a veteran's memorial. And again, there'd be wide approval for it. Very few people it's not like people would be okay with it. I mean, the vast majority of Americans would say, thank God, finally. And if whoever you're putting in jail for 10 years, if they started crying about it and they tried to do some interviews, and most of us would say, okay, cry some more. Like, I'm glad, give them another 10 years. Oh, my life's destroyed. You're putting me, good, I'm glad your life's destroyed. I'm glad it's destroyed. Like, that's what we should start doing. The people who treat our monuments and our memorials this way, their lives should be destroyed. Like, that should be the kind of choice that totally changes the trajectory of your entire life. You should spend the rest of your life regretting it. And if that makes you squeamish at all, I don't know why it would, but if you're one of the few people who'd feel squeamish about that, rather than just taking great joy in seeing the tears of someone like that being thrown in prison, I think most people would just, it'd be amazing. You pop champagne, love it. I love your sadness and suffering is I love it. I love every second of it. But if you do feel squeamish about it, the good news for you is that, like, you'd only need to do that to like one person and then never again, because none of these punks would ever do it again. But how many Republicans have specifically called for that law to be enforced? Not even a new law, just enforce the existing one. Now, Donald Trump did call for that. Actually, he signed an executive order for that to that effect back in the summer of 2020, as you may or may not recall. But obviously, that went out the window when Biden took office. So now we need to actually enforce the law. And I would add a new law that extends the protections to all of our monuments and memorials. Yes, we should protect veterans' monuments and memorials, but all of them. If it's a statue of a founding father, of any other historical figure, any of our historical heroes, they should all be protected. And it would be enormously popular. A measure like that would be enormously popular. So why isn't it happening? I know why Democrats aren't doing it. I know why they're not. I also know that if you were to write a law like this, try to pass a law like this right now, it would never be signed by Joe Biden. But let him not sign it. Put him in a position where he has to say, you know what? I'm not going to sign a law that actually protects our monuments and memorials. I want to allow people to continue doing this. Put Democrats in a position where they have to vote against it. Put them in that position. It's like, it's a win-win. Why not do it? We've been following the implosion of Kristi Noem's political career that all began with her memoir where she brags about killing her dog and a goat and I don't know, maybe other animals as well. Every time we hear more about this book, there's another animal that apparently lost its life. And then evidently she made up some stories about meeting world leaders and that sort of thing. And yesterday we played some clips of her disastrous interview on Face the Nation. It was one of the most awkward interviews a politician has ever given. And if you watched that segment yesterday on the show, and if you didn't, go back and watch it. But if you watch it, you know that this is not hyperbole. It's like one of the worst political interviews we've ever seen. Right now, I can't think of something worse. I mean, maybe there was, but it right now, nothing comes to mind. So just a catastrophe for Kristi Noem. Hilarious for the rest of us, however. And look, I don't mean to harp on this. At this point, it just feels a little mean. But yesterday, it's like, it's not my fault. I don't want to harp on it, but she's harping on it. So we have no choice. So yesterday, Kristi Noem did more interviews about this. Like she's many more interviews. All day she was on TV talking about this. And every interview was as bad as that Face the Nation one. So let's go through these. We're not going to play much, but just so you get the point here. So here she is on CBS Morning. She was just on CBS Face the Nation the previous day. She gets up early in the morning, bright and early, and goes back on CBS for more. And she's back to that same conversation. Let's watch that.
Adult working dog. It was an adult working dog. And this is a humane manner. According to the American Veterinarian Society, every state in the country has a law that allows what I did. And I was purpose of telling
this. It's a humane way to purpose shoot the dog?
Yes. The purpose of telling the story was so that people would know I don't pass my responsibilities on to anybody else.
Why are you doing this, Kristi? Sincerely, why? Why are you doing this to yourself? Stop. Is there does nobody in Kristi Noem's circle who could tell her this? Stop. Just stop. Like, you've now been on multiple shows defending your decision to kill a dog. This is not a good conversation for you. This is not the kind, it's just not the kind of argument you want to have. Even if you're right, it's not, there's no winning. It's a lose-lose. There's no win here. Okay, this is what you should always be thinking about. I shouldn't have to tell you this, but if you're a politician, especially, you're in the PR game all the time. Like, everything's PR. So what you should always be thinking to yourself is, what's the win? Like, before you say anything publicly, before you do anything, before you publish a book, before you go on and do an interview, you should always think, what is the win? And if there is no win, if there's no way to win in this situation, then you shouldn't be doing it. Then don't do it. And so what is the win? To go on a show like this and talk about your killing a dog for the 15th time in a week, what's the best case scenario? In your wildest imagination, what's the best way that this works out for you? There's no best case scenario. There's a worst case scenario and a worster, if I can invent a word, case scenario. So why are you doing it? But she kept doing it. Here she is on, it's all the same day, just so you understand. Here she is on News Nation.
Okay, but you didn't answer my question. When you record, you posted pictures and video of yourself recording the audiobook. Mm-hmm. When you recorded your own audiobook, you didn't notice
this passage? I'm not going to discuss about my meetings with world leaders.
I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you about recording the audiobook.
Did you want to talk about something else today?
No, I just wanted to know. We're just trying to get a straight answer from it. This has been...
Oh, you did. And I took responsibility for it. The buck stops with me. This anecdote, I should not have put in the book.
No, she doesn't want to talk about anything else. Why would she want to talk about anything else? No one wants to talk about anything but that with you now. For the next several months is the only thing anybody will want to talk about to you. So, no, she doesn't want to talk about anything else. Nobody wants to hear her talk about anything else. And so this is the line she's using to explain why there's stuff in the book that didn't really happen. The line is, well, I'm not going to talk about that. We're not going to discuss it. But it's in the book. So that's not... Look. This is the point. It's a lose-lose. There's no win here. But, so you have to settle on what your line is. That line is not winning. That line doesn't work. You can't use that line. I'm not going to talk about it. This is it's personal. I would never invade the privacy of Kim Jong-un by revealing. You put it in the book. So obviously you will talk about it. So that just doesn't work. Like, why? You have a line that doesn't work, and now you're doing a media tour so that you can say the line as many times as possible. And it continues, again, all the same day. Here she is on Newsmax.
So I talk about that decision, and I put it in the book because I want them to know that most politicians, they hide from the truth. They run away from making tough decisions, and I don't do either of those. I take my responsibility. I don't ask anybody else to do the tough decisions and make those hard decisions for me.
Okay. It's not about hiding from the truth. But you don't have to say everything. Like, the truth that you killed your dog is no one said you had to hide from it, but you also don't have to bring it up. You know, like, there's so many things you don't bring up publicly as a politician or any kind of public figure. There's so many things about yourself and about your life and about your history that you don't go around telling people all the time. Like, the majority of things that you have ever done and said, you don't talk about publicly, just because why would you? So put that in the category of stuff you don't talk about publicly. Well, it's a little bit late now. Finally, just so we can round out, this is how she ended the night. Once again, all the same day, and she ended with Fox News.
And I understand that they're attacking me for it, Jesse.
Yeah, they are. So they're also attacking you. I guess you said you met Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. Did you meet him?
I've been to the DMZ. I've been to North Korea. You know, people, I don't talk about my conversations with world leaders. And so when I looked at the book and I saw that excerpt, I decided to make the change to the content of the book, and that's been done.
So you didn't have a conversation with Kim when you were at the DMZ?
I don't have conversations about my conversations with world leaders. I've been working on policy for 30 years, Jesse, and that's what most people don't remember about me is I'm old. I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I've got three little grandbabies.
You're not that old. So maybe you did have a conversation with Kim, but you don't want to talk about
it. I will not talk about my personal conversations with any world leaders. It just won't, and I'm not going to do it.
Okay. And so she says, this is the line she's come up with for the Kim Jong-un bit. Well, did you meet Kim Jong-un? Well, I've been to North Korea. I've been around North Korea. I've seen it. I've heard of it. Did you, meet the president of China? Well, I've been to P.F. Chang's. I've had Chinese food. Was that your question? I've had egg rolls. If that's what you meant by that question, then that's my answer. All on one day. And this is after she did a couple of other interviews about the book that already went very poorly and resulted in ridicule from both sides of the aisle. This is what she does. She keeps going. And she keeps appearing on shows where she knows she's going to be asked why she put fake stories about meetings with world leaders in her book and why she killed the dog and the goat and whatever other animals she killed. None of these conversations are good politically. There's no good answer. There's especially no good answer for why there's fake stories in the book. Like, there's no, I don't know what's the good way to handle that. I don't know. There's really, the answer she's giving is bad. I couldn't even tell you a better answer. Because it's one of those situations where it's like, well, you got me. Maybe that, if you feel like you have to say anything at this point, that's probably what you should say. That's what you should have said from the beginning, probably. He says, all right, look, okay, you know what? Never mind. Forget the whole book thing, guys. Forget it. Don't even buy it. The book sucks. Whatever. It's mostly made up. You know what? I didn't even want to make the book. I didn't even write it. It's the ghostwriter wrote it. So that would be, like, that's not a great answer, but it is true. It's honest. And so it's probably your best answer at that point. What I want to know is who on Kristi Noem's team is advising her to do a relentless media campaign where she's continually forced to relive and rehash this extremely embarrassing episode. Who is advising her on this? It's remarkable to me. The amount of bad PR advice out there is just, it's incredible. Like, hire me to help you with PR. I'll do it for free, Kristi. I will help you for free. Like, let's think about the situation. Let's rewind. You have a book coming out. Some excerpts from the book start getting released. One of them is about killing your dog. The story is very, very poorly received by the public. Doesn't matter if you think that it should be better received. Doesn't matter. It's not being well received. The public doesn't like it. They're very upset about it. Doesn't matter if you think they shouldn't be upset about it. They are. And you're not going to change that. So you're getting a lot of extremely negative attention. What's more, at this point, you know, it's like the book's getting negative attention. You know there are other things in the book that could also be problematic. Not only that, but you also know that you actually leaned into the animal killing bit a lot. Okay, so you're in a situation that I imagine, it's like, I don't know, if you're a stand-up comedian and you've got a whole set and all the jokes are kind of on a similar theme and the first joke bombs, and then you're probably standing there thinking like, oh my gosh, if they didn't like this joke, they're gonna hate, I'm doomed, because every joke is like that. So she's in that situation where it's like she thought that the animal killing bit would kill. She thought, I mean, you know, figuratively and literally, she thought that the animal killing bit would do well. She thought people would love it. And they didn't. Like, the first glimpse of it that the public got, they hated it. And now she's sitting there here with a book and she's thinking like, oh my gosh, I have whole chapters about this. I end the book with a fantasy of killing Joe Biden's dog. I thought the public would love this stuff. And they hate it. Like, what am I going to do? So that's the situation she was in. And then you start thinking about, oh, I've got excerpts from the book that are made up. Like, it's a disaster. What do you do? Well, there's no good options. There's no positive spin. The book's a disaster. It was a mistake. You never should have done the book. Face it. Someone in her team should have told her this. Like, it's just, this was a mistake. The whole thing's a mistake. It's really bad. It's very, very bad for you. So now your only option, move on from it as quickly as you can. You have no other choice. Doing a media tour to justify killing your dog is not a win. That's a loss. Justifying the made up stuff in the book, that's not a win. You can't do that. You just have to move on. Do one friendly interview, which she already did with Sean Hannity. Have whatever your canned response is, and then never talk about the book again. Your publisher's not going to like it. They may even try to sue you because they're going to breach a contract because it's your obligation to promote the book. You come up with a deal with them. You pay back the advance, whatever. You figure something out behind the scenes, and then you just move on and never talk about it again. The good news is that we all say that she's destroyed her political career, and she has. Like, the political career she wanted has been destroyed. She wanted to be vice president. Not going to happen. Not going to ever happen. But you know, the truth is that she could still have some kind of political career. She'd probably run for Senate one day or something if she wants to, and maybe even win. Because the advantage that you have, and that any politician has, or anybody in general has, is that nothing matters in our society. Like, nobody remembers anything. Nobody cares about anything for more than 45 seconds. Something that happened a month ago may as well have been a year ago. A year might as well be a century. Like, we're all living. You know that scene in the Christopher Nolan Interstellar when they're on the planet with has a strong gravitational force and it warps time, and so every minute on the planet is like a year on Earth. And it's like that's sort of the reality we're all living in every day, where every minute might as well be a year. So you can actually survive anything, but you just have to stop talking about it. Just stop talking about it and go away and don't say anything. And, you know, 7-8 months from now, you can reemerge from hibernation. Nobody will care anymore. I wanted to talk about this in the headlines, except that it's not really a headline. It's actually a TV show recommendation. If you're looking for something to watch, I've got a recommendation for you. And, you know, at least I thought this wasn't a headline, but the Daily Mail, so I thought, I was like, I don't know where I can put this in the show. The Daily Mail has come along and bailed me out, because actually somehow my opinion of this TV show that I'm going to tell you about is headline news. Apparently. I mentioned it on Twitter a few days ago, and the Daily Mail just reported on my opinion of this TV show for some reason. I'll tell you the headline in a second. But first, I just want to tell you about this show. So my wife and I, we love the reality show called Alone, which maybe you're familiar with. And if you're not, it's maybe the only true reality show that's ever existed. And the basic premise is that 10 experienced, skilled survivalists are dropped off alone in a remote spot in the wilderness. And the game is pretty simple. They have to survive out in the woods, build their own shelter, find their own food, all that kind of stuff. And if they've had enough, they can't do it anymore. They have a satellite phone. They call a rescue team, comes, evacuates them. Whoever stays in the woods the longest wins. And they win, I think, $500,000 or something. No camera crew. They have to film everything themselves. So, it's a good show. It's not super exciting all the time because it's actually reality. Like, the producers aren't there. It's not Survivor or something, or the producers are there setting up challenges. And you've got the soap opera disputes between contestants. They're not even around each other. So you don't have any of that. It actually gets kind of boring through wide stretches of the show, which is what I like about it, because I'm weird like that. And anyway, we found out that's not the recommendation. I mean, you should watch that show if you haven't seen it. But we found out there's an Australian version of this show. And it's Alone Australia, is what it's called. And the American version's been around for like 10 years. And they just started last year with the Australian version. Now, I've happened across the fact that this show exists. And I thought, oh, you know, that sounds great. Like, first of all, surviving in Australia would be pretty tough. You'd think, like, Australia is a dangerous place. And I also thought Australians are a hardy people. You know, I bet they could survive for months without tapping out. Usually on the American version, you know, the winner survives 90 days, maybe at most, 100 days at most. I thought Australians, like, they could, this show will go on for 6 years and they won't tap out. I mean, this will be really interesting. So we started watching it, and it is good. Like, it's great, actually, but for a completely different reason, for the opposite reason. It's the opposite of what I expected, which makes it unintentionally like the funniest show that I've ever seen. Because apparently the producers of the Australian version of Alone decided that making Alone Australia isn't really what they wanted to do. What they wanted to do is they wanted to make Alone DEI edition. That's what they decided. And they should have just called it that. Like, if you call it that, then this show, you know, you'll have 10 million people watching the show. I mean, this would be, like, I wouldn't have to tell you about the show. You would have already heard about it. But that's what they did. So they got 10 contestants, just like the American version. But they did not get, like, gritty, skilled survivalist types. They were more concerned with checking all the PC boxes. So they ended up with two lesbians, two people who claimed to be indigenous, this, like, Gen Z environmentalist guy, and other people, like most of whom are totally unqualified for wilderness survival at all. And I don't want to give any spoilers away. I've only watched a few episodes of the show, but spoiler alert. One of the lesbians dropped out after one night, started crying and dropped out after one night. One of the indigenous guys, this is my favorite thing, like, at least just watch the second episode of the show. It's hilarious. This indigenous guy, he spends the whole first day like going on and on about how he's indigenous and he's in touch with nature and, you know, he can do this because he's indigenous. Oh, by the way, did you know I'm indigenous? I'm indigenous. I'm so indigenous. I'm the most indigenous guy of all time. And then he starts crying and drops out after 24 hours because he was lonely. The Gen Z guy, I'm not making this up. I swear to you, I'm not making this up. the Gen Z guy, he's like 22 years old. He takes a COVID test out in the wilderness with a COVID test, and it comes back positive. And he immediately calls the med team to evacuate him and starts complaining that his heart is racing. And he's like, the med team comes in on their boat and they take him out, and he's curled up in the boat, like shivering. And he just tested positive for COVID three minutes ago. This was all on the first day. They lost three people on the first day, all of them crying. Like, I could do better than this. I could at least, I have very few skills, survival skills of this type in the woods, but I could hack it for a few days at least. And you could just go down to Walmart and choose 10 people at random, and they would do better than these people are doing. And another guy, so there's another indigenous guy. So the one guy's gone now. There's another guy who, by the way, he's just a white guy. He's a complete white guy who keeps talking about how indigenous he is and all of his indigenous survival skills. Well, there's one scene, I think this is in the second episode, where he picks up a millipede, you know, like a little millipede, and it's bright colored millipede, and he eats it. He tries to eat it, and it makes his tongue numb, and he spits it out because it's toxic. Because it's a millipede. You don't eat anything that has that many legs, you don't eat it, of course. And if it's a bright colored insect with many legs, again, even I know, you don't eat that. There's a reason why it's bright colored. Like that, an insect like that could just hang out. It's not worried about anything eating it. Why do you think it was so easy to catch? Because all of the animals in the forest are smarter than you. Meanwhile, I'm not making this up. Each episode starts with a land acknowledgement. That's real. There are all kinds of these woke environmental restrictions, so they aren't allowed to hunt pretty much any game. They can't even use a fishing net because the endangered platypus might get caught in the net. So they can't eat. Like they're all there and they can't eat anything. And on the rare occasion that they do catch something to eat, like with a makeshift fishing line, most of them are vegetarians, so they get really emotional about the fact that they have to eat. One woman, she caught an eel, and she was really sad. She's like crying while she was beating the eel to death because she's a vegetarian. And then she ate it and was like trying to stifle her vomit while she's eating this poor creature. It's just, I'm telling you, it is. It's a bunch of woke, whiny liberals sitting around crying and starving in the forest. It's great. There are two contestants on the show who actually know what they're doing and usually with this shit, when you watch the American version of the show, you never know exactly who's going to win. With this one, there are two people, and you watch the show for 5 minutes. You're like, oh, okay, it's going to be one of them. Like, obviously it's one of them, because they know what they're doing. They know how to build the basic survival structures, and they have a good attitude. Like, they have some stoicism to them. They're not crying the whole time. And, so I highly recommend it. That's my take on the show. And here's the Daily Mail report, just so I can circle this all into the five headlines. Anti-woke American Matt Walsh unleashes at Alone Australia with blistering review. That was that. I'm not going to read the article because it just repeats everything I just said. I don't know why it's newsworthy. It's actually kind of sad because this was Daily Mail Australia who had this report about me talking about it on Twitter. And I guess in Australia, they're so starved for attention, like they're so ignored by the world, that some podcaster in America mentioning one of their shows is headline news, even though I hated it. So I got to say, I'm sure there are great people in Australia. But my opinion of Australia, I'm just being honest with you, my opinion of Australians has just plummeted. Like, before COVID, I thought that Australia was, first of all, an absolute hellscape where poisonous spiders rain from the sky. That part is true. But then I further thought that because of that, anyone who lives there, these have to be like the toughest sons of on the planet. I really thought, I thought it was a whole country of Steve Irwins. That's what I thought. And from COVID and now ending with this, I'm like, how is Australia the weakest, wokest, lamest country on earth. How is that possible? And if you have this few survival skills, how are you living in the country to begin with? I don't get it. It's amazing. All right. Let's get to the comment section.
If you're a man, it's required that you grow a beard. Hey, we're the Sweet Baby Gang.
First comment says, for this, we don't even need the what if the races were reversed question. I don't recall national outrage when someone wore a gorilla mask and threw an egg at Larry Elder. Well, that's true. And that's because conservative white men are the lowest class citizen. But conservative black men and women are somehow a class even lower than the lowest. Just look at how Clarence Thomas is treated. And that's because the conservative black person is hated for being conservative, but also gets the extra heap of contempt because on top of being conservative, they are also judged as traitors. But you're exactly right that, that is something, one can only imagine if one of these frat boys, did that to a black pro-Palestine protester, what the reaction would be. Next one says, the biggest scandal with Noam is the plastic surgery. She needs to stop now before she Madonna-izes her face. Yeah, I don't know if she got plastic surgery or not. It does sort of look like it. At this point, I do feel bad. But, I also wish that women would stop doing that to their faces. Like, if you're 50 years old, if you're a 50-year-old woman, I think Kristi Noem is in her 50s, just be a 50-year-old woman. It's fine. It's fine to be 50. Let yourself be 50. It's perfectly fine. I don't know. With all this plastic surgery everybody's getting, it reflects that we live in a very superficial culture and all of that. We live in a culture that is terrified of aging, terrified of death. Because they're terrified of death, they're therefore terrified of aging. Like that's where the fear of aging comes from, the fear of death. It's what makes aging embarrassing to people these days, and it's been this way for a while, of course, my whole life. It's like to ask somebody their age is considered embarrassing. You're not supposed to ask that. And we take that for granted, but we should understand that this, historically, it was not the case that aging was an embarrassing thing or that asking someone their age was an embarrassing question. In fact, it was the opposite. For most of human history and most cultures, to be older was a sign of, you're proud of it. You're an elder, you're now sort of a village elder and or an older statesman type. And so this was not a point of shame. And for most of history, the idea that an older person would try to look younger, try to pass off as younger would be totally absurd. Why would you want to do that? If somebody was 67 years old and you asked them how old they are, they wouldn't say, I've been 20 for 40 years or something dumb like that. I'm 67 years young. Like you wouldn't get an answer like that. They'd be proud to be. I'm 67. I've been on Earth for 67 years. Yeah, I'm proud of that. I have all this experience and wisdom. So that's where a lot of this comes from. But it also comes from a total lack of honesty. And I think so many of these women who've gotten these procedures done, this work done on their faces, no one is being honest with them. No one in their life is being honest with them and saying, don't do that. You will look worse. You look worse now. Don't do it. Even though we all know it, right? Another comment says, doesn't Noam remember the huge controversy that derailed Romney's presidential bid? Apparently, he strapped a crate containing the family dog on the roof of his car for a road trip and traumatized the poor thing. Well, yeah, and this was, of course, years ago. It was well over a decade ago that was a major controversy because even over a decade ago, we were a culture that valued animal life over human life. It's only gotten worse since then. So it just goes to show how politically suicidal this whole episode has been. But the thing about that is that the thing with the dog on top of the car, as far as, and I don't remember the specifics of that, it doesn't matter. I don't think that Romney brought that up himself on the campaign. I mean, maybe at some point, how did that come out? I don't remember. Maybe he had mentioned it. I could be wrong about that. But if that did come out on its own somehow, or it was people digging up comments he had made from years earlier, it's much more defensible than you being the one who brings it up, especially during a campaign. Finally, I love Matt, but how can he say Noam is bad for shooting an unruly dog, yet he wants to ban pit bulls? Look, if the dog was a pit bull, then I'd nominate her for a Nobel Peace Prize. So that's the first thing. Although, look, and I've also got many quotes. We talked about pit bulls again a few days ago, and I always get the question of, well, okay, you have this problem with pit bulls. What are we supposed to do about it? Like, what's your solution? We're going to go door to door and start shooting people's pit bulls? No, I don't think that a pit bull ban would necessitate that. I'd be fine with just letting the breed die out. Like, that's how merciful I am. Okay, I'm a merciful person. I'm very merciful, compassionate. I'm a very sensitive person. And so I think we should ban pit bulls, but that's not what I'm calling for. I'm not calling for a door-to-door search to find the pit bulls and stage mass pit bull executions. I'm just saying, let the breed die out. Like, just ban the breeding of the dog. And you can't sell the dog. You can't adopt the dog. You can't, the pit bulls that exist right now, that's it. It ends with them. And then we just kind of wait it out. And if you were to do that, then in the next 10 years, like, there'd be no pit bulls left, really. And I think that that's a solution we should all be able to agree on. Court reconvenes tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, and it is indeed your civic duty to watch my new Daily Wire Plus series, Judge, by Matt Walsh. Now, to the astonishment, perhaps dismay of some, my rulings are indeed legally binding. Step into my courtroom with your petty grievances, and you'll find my verdicts are final, as they rightfully should be. In today's episode, you'll witness maternal discord erupt as a mom accuses her daughter of car theft, with evidence that even I struggle to make sense of. Plus, a heated cat custody battle ensues. You don't want to miss that. Remember, the courtroom is my domain, but entry is exclusive to Daily Wire Plus members. So make the wise decision. Get your membership now at dailywireplus.com and watch me bring justice to the most important cases of our generation. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. Well, it seems that Star Wars has gone woke again. For approximately the 10,000th time, Star Wars has been used as a vehicle to push a radical left-wing agenda. The Washington Examiner reports, a new animated Star Wars television series features a Jedi who is non-binary, with other characters referring to this Jedi as them. The new Disney Plus series, Tales of the Empire, consists of 6 shorts, with one of the episodes featuring the non-binary Jedi. It's not the first time the Star Wars franchise has incorporated LGBT characters, as 2 female characters were shown kissing at the end of the 9th film in the franchise. The scene was cut when the film was released in Singapore and Dubai. In 2021, Lucasfilm unveiled 2 transgender non-binary characters in its comic book series titled Star Wars: The High Republic. Now, that is, of course, a very abbreviated roundup of the wokeness in the Star Wars universe, and we'll get back to that point in a moment. But first, let's watch this scene featuring the non-binary they-them Jedi. Watch.
Then come with me. We need to get them to the ship. We can save them.
Forget it. Let them die. It's not worth the trouble.
They were about to surrender.
Irrelevant. The Jedi are a threat to be eradicated wherever they are found.
Okay, so apparently the non-binary Jedi is about to die, and I don't know if there's a miraculous recovery after this. I'm not sure what happens. We're left in suspense about the fate of the non-binary Jedi. And, you know, I have to keep referring to this character as the non-binary Jedi because I'm not sure if it's actually male or female. I guess it's neither of those, biologically speaking, because it's a cartoon. But in any event, you know, I find this line to be pretty funny. She says, let them die. She doesn't care if the non-binary Jedi dies. And yet, even as she expresses that level of disdain, she still makes sure to respect the pronouns. So she'll leave you to wither and die, cold and alone and forgotten in the dirt. But she would never dream of using a pronoun you don't like, which is actually a perfect summation of woke ideology and pretty funny in this context, although it becomes a lot less funny when you consider the fact that this propaganda is in a children's show. And as for that propaganda, the good news is that people are officially sick of it. The Daily Wire reports this morning, quote, a new poll shows Americans overwhelmingly want Disney to return to family-friendly, wholesome entertainment and stop making programming about sexuality and pushing its LGBTQ agenda. In a national survey by Rasmussen reports, 1,255 American adults were polled by telephone and online whether they agreed or disagreed with the following statement. Disney should return to wholesome programming and allow parents to decide when their children are taught about sexuality. The result found that 71% of American adults agreed that Disney should return to wholesome programming and give the power back to parents to decide when their children are taught about sexuality. That number included 53% who strongly agreed with that statement, 22% disagreed with the sentiment, and that also included 10% who strongly disagreed. Now, if you prefer to focus on the dark cloud inside the silver lining, you might point out that the 22% figure is extremely concerning. Sure, 71% of American adults got the answer right, but 22% don't want Disney to put out wholesome content? 22% of adults are actively opposed to wholesome content for children? Now, you might say that that's the real headline here, but the good news is that that trend seems to be heading in the right direction. Quote, the result of the poll appears to be a shift of 20% in the culture in 2 years over the entertainment giant's agenda to include gay and transgender characters in children's programming. In 2022, Rasmussen reports asked 1,000 American adults via telephone and online if the emphasis on inclusion and diversity by companies like Disney was making children's entertainment better or worse. 45% said that the push for inclusion is making kids' entertainment worse, while 28% of American adults believe the emphasis on DEI issues by Disney is making children's entertainment better. So the interesting thing here is that the number of adults who actively want this kind of woke brainwashing in their children's show has stayed almost the same, dropping slightly from 28% to 22%. Yet you have this massive shift on the other end, and that shift happened because of the middle. You know, in that poll in 2022, 18% said that the propaganda isn't affecting the quality of the product at all, and another 10% weren't sure. So it seems that this chunk, the nearly 30% who couldn't make up their mind or refused to admit that any of this matters, they've been convinced otherwise after seeing how far the wokeness has gone. Now, it's unfortunate that they had to learn this lesson the hard way, but at least people are finally sick of the propaganda and especially sick of their children being subjected to it. You shouldn't have to get sick of it. You shouldn't have any tolerance for it to begin with. But the trends are moving in the right direction, and so we can at least be happy about that. Now, with that said, let's focus on Star Wars specifically for a moment. And really this question that I've posed before, and I will again, and it's not rhetorical. I really want an answer for this. Why is anyone still watching any Star Wars-related product? Why are you putting it on for your kids to watch? Okay. Star Wars doesn't just have woke elements in it. The franchise has been at the forefront of injecting left-wing agitprop into entertainment. Out of all the popular entertainment franchises, it is the main culprit. And on top of all of that, it sucks. It's bad. Now, look, even if I were to agree with the rather dubious claim that the original Star Wars trilogy was a cinematic masterpiece, okay, simply for the sake of argument, let's just agree with that. There's no denying that all Star Wars content since the original trilogy has been mediocre at best and often quite a bit worse than mediocre. So if you're keeping track at home, okay, that means that Star Wars was good, arguably, for about 6 years. And it's been bad for 40 years. 40 years of badness. How many years of badness do you need? Do you need 100 years? Can we check back 60 years from now after 100 years of it sucking? And can you then finally admit that, like, maybe we can move on from Star Wars? Let me ask you this. If you went to a restaurant in 1983 and you had a delicious meal, but every meal you've had at that restaurant since then has tasted like reheated dog vomit, would you still be going to that restaurant? How much garbage would you let that place shovel into your mouth before you got the message? At what point does everyone stop eating at that restaurant that has served nothing but bad food for 40 years straight? Why is a restaurant even still in business with that kind of track record? The original chef who made the good meal 40 years ago doesn't even work there anymore. He's gone. And even he forgot how to cook before he left. And now there's nobody in the kitchen who knows how to cook. They can't even work the stove. I mean, they're serving the food. They're serving your food out of cans, heating it up in the microwave. Like, why are you still going there? And even worse, as they serve the bad food that they heated up in the microwave, they lecture you. Okay, it's all a bunch of feminists and LGBT activists that are working at this place now. It's been that way for 20 years at least. And they hate you. All of the employees openly despise you. Yet they will happily take your money and wag their fingers in your face and scold you and then serve you a bowl of, like, microwaved canned corn and charge you exorbitant amounts of money for it. Like, the food isn't even bad in a creative or imaginative way. It's not even like they're trying to cook up new, interesting culinary creations and failing. They're not even trying to be creative. They're not trying at all. They're just serving up the same slop over and over and over again. And they're doing it with a scowl. They are coming over and just ladling out the microwaved corn and cussing in your face. It's like, I hate you. I despise you. You piece of garbage. Here's your corn. And you're sitting there like, thank you. How much will that be? Oh, $67? Well, sure. And here's a 40% tip as well. Keep coming back and giving them your money. Why? Why? Now, I've probably ridden this restaurant analogy as far as I can take it. I think the point has been made. Star Wars is bad. The quality is bad. The writing is bad. The acting is bad. Even the special effects have gotten worse over time somehow. Star Wars has been bad for longer than I've been alive. And now it's hopelessly woke on top of it. The whole franchise is owned by feminists and left-wing activists, people who hate the audience and hate the material that they've been entrusted with. There is no conceivable incentive for anyone to watch any Star Wars content again. Like, I'm not even asking you to boycott Star Wars. I'm not saying boycott. I'm just saying, why? Just don't. There's nothing enjoyable about this. Stop doing it. Every new Star Wars show should have an audience of zero. Every new Star Wars film should make $0 at the box office. Have some self-respect. Say no to Star Wars. In the words of the Star Wars character in that clip, let them die. It's time. It's well past time. And that is why anyone who still watches anything related to Star Wars is today canceled. That'll do it for the show today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day. Godspeed.